Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2018, Episode 16. The tide is starting to turn. The winds of the West Division are starting to head west, as far west as they can go in the Big Ten Conference. No, Nebraska's not going to win the West Division, but boy, oh boy, are the Huskers playing like the best team in the West Division. Routing Illinois, now getting ready for Michigan State. Good to have you along for another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. I'm Travis Justice. Let's bring in the one, the only, Dr. Rob Zadiska, who's been waiting for this podcast since, Friday, or Saturday, rather, right around 6:30 p.m.
You know who is going to win the West?
Northwestern is going to win the West. It was ironic that Northwestern won the West Division the same day it became bowl eligible. Think about that for a second.
Basically, all their wins are in the conference.
You're right. I mean, they lost to Akron.
Yeah.
They lost to Akron. But, you know, there is something. Nebraska lost to Northwestern. Iowa lost to Northwestern.
At least we took them into overtime.
That's a fair point.
Yeah, I should rephrase that. They took us into overtime, yes. And then beat a worn down defense.
So the only loss in conference is to Michigan, which was a 3-point loss. Now, we're supposed to be talking about Nebraska in this podcast, but we cannot just ignore what Northwestern has done and how well coached Pat Fitzgerald has that team week in and week out.
They really do, and I feel bad for the fact that they start almost every season off kind of weak. This is a team that I think year in and year out starts off a little under-talented, young at a lot of spots, and consistently develops as the season goes along. They get better as the season goes, and they're like that every single year. When they have a team that has a lot of seniors, that's when he punches out those consistent 10-2 seasons. But he's got a lot of gaps on this team talent-wise and experience-wise, and I think that showed early in the year.
Is it good for the Big Ten to have Northwestern in the Western Division or in the Big Ten title game where it will play either Ohio State or Michigan? I mean, is that I don't know.
They've given Michigan a better run for their money than anybody else.
They won't again. Michigan's
has.
Pretty playing pretty darn good right now.
I agree. I think Michigan's on a bit of a roll right now. That's a good question because, God, it's not like Wisconsin is looking all that good right now. They're not looking good.
Iowa's definitely not looking good.
Iowa's not. Purdue
got smoked by Minnesota.
They got beat by Minnesota. They got beat by Michigan State. I mean, Purdue all of a sudden, they've done some good things this year. They've done some not so good things this year. At this point, they might be more inconsistent than Nebraska is. I mean, they play great football, and then they play horrible football.
I would say Nebraska is not inconsistent. Iowa started off the season off good, is getting worse. Nebraska is getting better as the season goes along. And the amount of points and the amount of yards they racked up against Illinois, Rob, was darn right impressive. I was sitting in the WHO radio studios in Des Moines when you texted me and you said, listen, this team's on track to outpace the 95 numbers. I didn't look into that.
They actually already have.
Are they outpacing?
Well, not in rushing offense.
Okay.
Rushing offense, I think that 95 team, they were penny shy from averaging 400 yards a game on the ground. I mean, that's insane.
Now, to be fair, this was Illinois, too. I mean,
and I'd be the first to tell you, Illinois sucks. They are horrible.
Watch Iowa get beat by this weekend.
Oh, that was. I think Iowa's defense is good enough. They're going to rein in Illinois' offense. Illinois actually has an okay offense. I think it's Corbin, their running back.
And A.J. Bush was a pretty decent quarterback.
Corbin played very well. He got injured against Nebraska. And I think even Michael Sevier had a tweet where the moment Corbin got hurt, Sevier said, this game's over. And he's right. That was the point where Nebraska had a couple of turnovers in their favor that allowed them to take a 2-touchdown lead. But you kind of kept waiting for Illinois to catch up to them. Moment Corbin got hurt, that was game over. They just weren't going to catch up. A.J. Bush was impressive. The kid's a ball player. Now, he's not going to beat you with his arm, but he can definitely beat you with his legs, and he can get into open space running. He can buy time for himself. There's a couple of times where he had some reasonably decent passes. They were good enough because he was able to keep himself on the move and stay away from the pass rush because of his running ability. But I do think Iowa's defense, I think they'll do a better job than Nebraska's did against Illinois' offense. I don't think Iowa's going to have a problem with Illinois. That Illinois, God, that defense is horrendous.
It gives up over 500 yards of total offense per game. Nebraska went for over 600 with them. What's been the turnaround? I know the Northwestern game was kind of a meltdown. Is it because the offense has always been executing? Penalties not there, lack of stupid plays at different times. What's been the difference for Nebraska in the last couple of weeks where people are really starting to feel good?
Well, there's a few things. One, they've played, in terms of quality opponents, Nebraska's really only played two really
teams. That's fair.
Now, one of those two good teams was Michigan, who's a really good team this year. It's incredible.
And the other is Ohio State, right?
And the other is Ohio State. Northwestern's playing good football right now. Northwestern's one of those teams that would be a pain in the ass for anybody with any style of offense or defense. Northwestern, God, they really hung in there against Ohio State. But that Northwestern team can really do some damage for a lot of people. But when it comes to really, really good teams that Nebraska's played this year, it's Michigan and Ohio State. They got beat by Michigan, and they deserve to get beat by Michigan. I don't think that game was as indicative of the true Nebraska. I think Nebraska's maybe a little better than what they showed. But I'll say this. There's no way Nebraska beats Michigan in 2018. That Ohio State game, though, Nebraska, they should have won that game. The defense, it was probably arguably in my mind, one of the best defensive efforts from Nebraska this year. And the offensive effort was okay. And they still put up 450 plus yards of total offense, scored 31 points. Nebraska left two scores on the field that day. They easily should have beat Ohio State. It was one of the sloppier offensive games I've seen out of Nebraska from a decision-making and execution standpoint. When I look at what Nebraska's done, you ask me why they're hitting stride right now. In truth, part of the reason is because they haven't played a lot of really good teams. I mean, keep in mind, the teams that they've beat, it's Minnesota. They're horrible, despite what they did to Purdue.
True.
Minnesota's not a good team. It was Bethune-Cookman. I mean,
that's fair.
Dude, they're not even, I mean, even in 1AA, they're not a very good team. And then their third win is Illinois, who has a reasonably dangerous offense. They got an offense capable of putting up 500 yards against us.
Well, hold on to those defense questions, because a lot of listener email coming in tonight has to do with the defense.
We'll touch on it.
So is this false hope?
I don't think it's false hope. And now the reason I say it's not false hope is because Nebraska's put up the numbers offensively against everybody.
That's fair.
The only team they really didn't was Michigan. But every single team on that schedule, Colorado, Troy State, Northwestern, Purdue, Ohio State, I mean, they've put the numbers up against everybody. That Colorado game was one of the most statistically mind-blowing games I've ever watched. When you look at the statistics, there's almost no way Nebraska should have lost that game until you look at turnovers and penalties, and then you realize what the hell happened. And that's so that's a key thing too, is that it's there's not false hope, because Nebraska's put the numbers up. They clean up those mistakes on offense. The turnovers and penalties, the decision making, the execution errors, and all of a sudden that offense is something to behold. I remember, you know, I bring him up often. My cousin Matt, the Buckeye in Ohio, who's a huge Husker fan actually, but he graduated from Ohio State. I was texting him during that Colorado game, essentially Nebraska's first game of the year. And I remember texting him saying, hey, win or lose, this is going to be fun to watch. And going forward especially, it's going to be fun to watch this offense. And this offense is fun to watch. But they had that capability going back to day one. They have cleaned up a lot of the mistakes. That's allowed them to score the 50-plus points you saw them score. The defense and special teams did some good things. We didn't have a horrendous day on special teams. Conversely, special teams got us a couple of big turnovers. We got some turnovers on defense. And we'll talk more on the defense here. I mean, there's some bright things that came out of the game defensively that I think that I'll need to point out to people. But yes, why they're hitting on all cylinders. One, the schedule hasn't been that hard. And two, they have cleaned up a lot of crap.
Hey, don't forget the Remington Trophy presentation coming up on January 12th, 2019 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. 6:30 for the cocktail hour, 7:30 for the program, where you'll see Frank Caliendo. He'll be doing the entertainment this year. Of course, Caliendo can do a ton of impersonations. The Remington Trophy will be presented at the ESPN Awards show in early December, and then the winner will be in Lincoln on January 12th. If you want to see some of the Remington Trophy finalists or watch list members, just go to the RemingtonTrophy.com. Check out the Twitter feed. Right now you can see that TJ McCoy is... from Florida is one of the Remington Trophy finalists. How about Cal Center, Addison Ohms? Just a whole bunch of stuff on there. Jake Hansen from Oregon, who we've talked about earlier in the year. So again,
love Hansen.
Go to RemingtonTrophy.com for ticket and table information to the Remington Trophy presentation, and check out the watch list of everybody who's on the Remington Trophy watch list. And don't forget, well, the official beer of the Remington Trophy podcast, Husker Doc Talk podcast, is... Infusion Brewing Company. Tonight we're repeating. We have been, this is our 16th podcast. We've gone through all their beers. So now we are repeating, and we went with one of our favorites, because when you go back a second time, you know it's a damn good beer. And we're going with the Wet Hop Pale Ale, and it's from
it's going down smooth tonight.
You know, when you hear hop, you think, oh my God, it's going to be super bitter. It only has an IBU of 38. It's got a ABV of 5.5. It's from the Midwest hop producers, as they put the Chinook wet hops, 30 pounds worth, in this thing. It's a floral and citrusy pale ale, showcases all the fresh hops has to offer.
Now, it is a crisp and dry hopped beer. It is, but it, oh my God, it's smooth.
So next week is Thanksgiving week. So what do you think next Monday? We do a live recording of the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy at the Benson location for Infusion Brewing Company.
I am so in.
So there is your open invitation.
I am doing flights of beer.
There we go. Rob's going to be there. I'm going to be there. We're going to recruit some of our favorite friends to be there. And, of course, if you listen to this podcast, you are a friend. And we encourage you to get to the Infusion Brewing Company in Benson next Monday. What kind can you start recording? Because the schedule's all around you. Does Piper have swimming next week?
Yeah, probably.
All right.
7?
No, you'll never make it by 7.
30.
You'll never make it by 7:30.
45.
Let's shoot for 8 o'clock, start recording.
Let's do it.
Okay? There you go.
Hey, can we get all listeners, by the way, if you guys get a chance to stop by either Infusion Brewing location, ask them to put together Loose Morals. Come on.
Hey, we want a petition.
I want a grassroots effort to get Loose Morals brewed here.
There it is. Rob loves the Loose Morals. I've talked to Danielle about it.
You want me to say what's actually on my mind? you get me about halfway through a podcast full of Loose Morals.
That's right.
I will tell you what I think.
So there you go. Next Monday, mark it down in your calendar. We're going to start recording around 8 o'clock. I'll be there probably closer to 7. Rob will come moseying on in right around 8 o'clock. We'll sit down and we'll record and we'll just drink beer and talk football and have a lot of fun. You can ask Rob a bunch of questions as soon as we're done. We'll invite, of course, Scotty from Husker Hounds. We'll invite Chad from Ticket Express. We'll have people from Infusion there. We'll drink beer, do all sorts of good stuff, and talk football. So next Monday, 8 o'clock, Infusion Brewing Company in Benson. Be there as we record the Husker Doc Talk podcast. This next game, the schedule gets a little harder, and this one tugs at your heart every year because you are also a Michigan State fan. Yes, folks, believe it or not, Dr. Rob is a fan of a different team, too. He is a fan of Michigan State.
I do like the Spartans.
He likes the Spartans.
Unless Nebraska plays, and then I want to see Nebraska just grind them into the dirt.
There you go. There you go.
I want the dirt road ass whooping when Nebraska plays Michigan State.
Will it be a dirt road ass whooping?
This is kind of an interesting game for me because I think on offense, Michigan State's really
average, if that.
They're average, and they're kind of Iowa light on defense. They've got a solid defense, but I don't think they're as good as Iowa's defense.
I'm starting to – we'll get into Iowa in a little bit, but you know, after giving up 184 yards on the ground to Northwestern, who's one of the worst running teams in the Big Ten, I'm starting to wonder about Iowa's defense.
But that was all they did was run the ball.
What's Nebraska going to do?
They're going to run. They're going to pass. They're going to option. They're going to RPO.
They're going to have you guessing all over the place.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be nuts. I think Michigan State's – I do think they're a pretty good team. They've got – is it three losses? Ohio State, Michigan, Arizona State – you're looking it up right now.
I'm
going to
look it up while you talk.
I think they've got three losses. Might be four losses on the season. I thought it was Michigan, Ohio State, and Arizona State.
That would be correct, sir.
Okay. So they
squeaked by Utah State 38-31.
Yeah, that was one of those early games.
Lost to Arizona State 16-13. Beat Indiana 35-21. Beat Central Michigan 31-20. Lost to Northwestern, 29.
So they do have Northwestern. Yeah,
29-19. Beat Penn State 21-17. Then lost to Michigan 21-7. Beat Purdue 23-13. Beat Maryland 24-3. Lost to Ohio State 26-6.
Yeah, that Ohio State game was just this past weekend. Just not a very imaginative offense. It's been painfully vanilla, which they usually are. D'Antonio's always run kind of a fairly bare bones basic pro style offense. Defense, they've been good but not great. Teams have moved the ball on them. Teams have scored points on them. I don't see Michigan State being able to come into Lincoln and stop Nebraska's offense. Now, when I say that, Nebraska's put up 400 or 500 yards against almost everybody the entire season. The question is do they turn the ball over? Do they have penalties? Are they going to make some execution errors? If Nebraska can maintain their trend of not doing that, then I think Nebraska outscores Michigan State because I don't think – as mediocre as Nebraska's defense has played this year on the whole – I don't think Michigan State comes in and poses a major threat. I don't think you're going to see.
This isn't a Michigan State team from even a couple years ago. Not even close.
No. If Nebraska puts up 35 points on this coming Saturday, I don't see Michigan State putting up 38 or 42, whatever, to beat them.
The most they've scored all year is 35.
Yeah.
And 38 in the first game of the season.
And I'd be the first to tell you, when I watched Illinois play both the Saturday and then in previous games, you look at what Bush can do. Illinois is a team that can put up 350 to 500 yards against almost anybody. They're just not going to stop. Yeah. There is nobody that Illinois' defense is going to be able to stop.
Now, there will be extra emotion inside Memorial Stadium this weekend as it is Senior Day. why don't you talk about these seniors and what they've been through, which is a lot.
God.
And just to get to this point, they won't go to a bowl, but you can still end it pretty decent.
The fifth-year seniors have been through three head coaches.
That's amazing.
On defense, what did we count up? The fifth-year seniors, this is their fourth defensive coordinator. I think for the defensive backs, it's something like their sixth or seventh position coach. I mean, these guys got to be complete head cases considering all the coaches they've had to run through. On offense, not quite as bad, but again, it's been for the fifth-year seniors, three head coaches. You've gone from Tim Beck to Danny Langsdorf to Troy Walters for offensive coordinators. There's the saving grace for these guys, in my opinion, given where I truly think Nebraska football is headed. I think they're headed for good things. I think 20 years from now, these guys are going to get asked. Because I get asked this now.
Coming up on 25 years ago.
Yeah, scarily, I played almost 25 years ago. I get asked, hey, who did you play for, Osborne or Solich? That's why I played all for Osborne.
Do you really get asked that? They forget.
Keep in mind, I was only 3 years removed from Solich as a head coach.
Okay, that's fair.
So 94 was my senior season. 97 was Osborne's last year. 98 was Solich's first year. Yeah. So 4 years, I guess. But I get asked that. I mean, 25 years later, people kind of start forgetting. It's like, crap, did you play for Osborne?
Here's what I worry about, Rob. Here's what I worry about. Because they won't ask these guys that. You know why? This is the law. You have almost a 20-year lost generation of Nebraska football. You do.
You do. Yeah, I'll give you that. Well, but what I was going to say is that when somebody asks these kids who you played for, they're going to be able to say, I played for Coach Frost. I think that's what they've got, and I think that's some. Truthfully, I think that's a point going to be a point of pride for these guys, that they were there at the beginning. It was not a great year by any means, but they were part of the process. And this is the first Nebraska team where I've looked at them and I'd have been able to look from the beginning of the year to at least this point and say, I've seen development. I mean, the offensive line, I can't believe how much progress they've made. Now, I'm not saying they're great. I mean, this is not the second coming of Nebraska 95, Nebraska 94. Crap, even Nebraska 99, which actually had a really great offensive line. This isn't 82 with Remington and Steinkuhler. This isn't 70 and 71 with Dick Rupert at guard. These guys are okay, but God damn it, it's the first time in 20 years I've seen development where I've been able to look and say, okay, game five, they played better than game one. Game nine, they played better than game five. They've gotten better. They've gotten more consistent. They've developed. Just haven't seen that in the last 20 years, and I'm excited about that. You can look at this team and you can tell, oh, my God, look at what they're doing. Look at some of the measurables in terms of general offensive production. And it's you look at it and you go, oh, my God, there's still so much they can improve upon. I mean, they can still make fewer execution and decision-making mistakes. They can make fewer penalties. They can have fewer turnovers. And they're going to be far better than they are right now. And like I said, they've already set an all-time Nebraska record for, was it seven straight games of 450-plus yards? That's an all-time record for Nebraska. They're probably going to beat it against Michigan State. I really believe they're going to do that. And that game against Iowa is going to be really, really interesting. And the reason it is because it's the first time since the Michigan and Ohio State games that Nebraska plays what, in my opinion, is actually a very good defense.
It'd be interesting because you brought up something. You know, these seniors that got to play for Scott Frost, they'll be able to say they played for Scott Frost, and I think they'll be part of the program, and fans will accept them as part of the program. I do look at, from everybody who came in during Callahan, almost the way through Riley, that they're the lost boys of Husker football. Zach Taylor is going to be possibly named the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, and I don't think he...
So I was going to mention Zach Taylor. Yeah. The reason I said that is you said lost boys.
Yeah.
So last year, Zach Taylor was voted into the Nebraska Football Hall of Fame. I sent a tweet out there, and I don't remember exactly what my tweet was, but it was basically good for him. I was very happy about this, and the gist of my tweet was the reason I was happy that Zach Taylor got voted into the Nebraska Football Hall of Fame is because he was a Callahan guy, and I worry about some of these guys who played for Callahan, maybe even a few of the guys who played for Pelini, not a lot, but a few. Definitely, again, the guys who played for Riley. The way I phrased it was getting relegated to the kitchen junk drawer of Nebraska football history, that they're just kind of a forgotten, they're just forgotten groups of guys. And I look at these guys, there are some amazing players that played for
Abdullah won't be, Burkhead won't be, but there's a lot of other good players that I think have been forgotten
about. Joe Gann's career was salvaged by being able to play that last season or so for Pelini. O-line, look at some of these guys like Zach Starrup, Carl Nix.
Carl Nix was a hell of a player.
Oh, my God, Pro Bowler in the NFL for the Saints. I mean, there were some absolutely amazing players that played for these coaches, and it kills me that these guys – aren't the household names that... I mean, I look at guys like Scott Raridan, who... I don't even think Scott was an All-American. Now his kid's in Lincoln, but there's these guys like Raridan and Mark Benning and Bob Sledge and Kevin Leitner and John McCormick. I mean, all these guys that I grew up watching as a junior high school and high school kid playing offensive line that I looked at and really looked up to in terms of who they were and what they represented and how they played. And you've got these, I call them generations, but football generations, guys that played for 4 or 5 years for Callahan, guys who played for Riley, that I think the saving grace for a lot of these guys is somebody's going to ask them, who did you play for? And those guys who were seniors in 2015, 2016 are going to say, I played for Bo Pelini. And the guys who played in 2016 and 2017 are going to say, yeah, I played for Scott Frost. I think that's what's going to end up happening when guys attach themselves to who they played for and what teams they were on.
Is it important for Scott and Matt Davison, should we say, they've embraced the 90s. Is it important for them to go back and get some – the players that are the lost generation and get them back into the fold?
I think they're perfectly welcome. Now, I don't know if there's been this embracing the 90s other than...
Well, because everybody's here.
One, that's true. We don't stray
you
too
don't
far.
Leave. You're all doctors selling insurance or working at UP, all right?
You know, I'd be the first to tell you there's a little bit of benefit that comes from...
Don't deny that at all. I'm just saying.
I moved to Indianapolis. Guess what? Nobody gives a rat's ass that I played for Nebraska. I don't think they've embraced the 90s so much as they've taken the philosophical foundations that built those teams and have reincorporated them. Okay. And it's been a while since I've seen a coach do that. And I'm talking about, I mean, the walk-on programs, using scout teams, actual scout teams during practice, both to develop players as well as provide guys to practice against. making strength and conditioning a massive priority. It hasn't been for 15, 20 years. Strength and conditioning is a huge priority down in Lincoln right now. Those, it's, you know, it was funny listening to Greg Sharp talk about Nebraska. This is an interview with Greg going into the season. He made the point that when you look at these guys, they look like football players. They look bigger and stronger than Nebraska football players have looked in a decade. They look the part finally. And that was after one measly little offseason under Zach Duvall. Let's do that again and see how these guys look next year. I mean, that emphasis is going to be huge. There's a lot of things to look forward to here, but when I think about embracing the 90s, that's what I'm thinking about, is that emphasis on strength and conditioning, that emphasis on some of these underlying foundational philosophies of how you do things. It's, I think people had half a notion with Frost that, like, God, is he going to come in and we're going to have, like, the option again? And no, it's, I mean, Frost's offense is Frost's offense. It'll be interesting watching this going forward, and it's going to be a lot of fun watching it go forward because it is so different than what Osborne ever did. But those that underlying foundation that we used in the 90s, the things that would make any team or any organization successful, that's what he's embraced.
Hey, don't forget, when you need to get tickets to the game, there's only one place to go, and that would be Ticket Express. Yes, there's only one home football game left. You don't want to miss Senior Day. You don't want to miss the showdown with Michigan State. And Ticket Express at TicketExpress.com has you covered. Want club seats? Ticket Express has them. Want parking passes? Ticket Express has them. Want in the end club champion or the Champions Club? Well, guess what? Ticket Express has them. Husker basketball, Creighton basketball, Orpheum shows, Holland Center shows. Want to go outside the Omaha-Lincoln market? They've got you covered. Anywhere you want to go, any event, all the time, Ticket Express and TicketExpress.com. Chad runs, he's been in business over, what, 20 years now? 25 years, I think. He runs a first-class organization. It's amazing. He can find you what you want, of course, at the most competitive prices. So go to Ticket Express and TicketExpress.com for all your ticket needs. Now, Rob was just at Husker Hounds, and he has got the coolest, and I mean the coolest, Columbia jacket.
I love my new coat.
You got a parka, man.
Oh, it's like a multi-layered, like, convertible one. I can, like, take the outer layer off, and I've got an inner jacket. It's so awesome.
That is pretty cool. And I've never seen this. It's got, like, this heat reflector, so it keeps your body heat in the coat.
It's like, have you seen, like, the emergency blankets where it's the...
It's like what they give you right after surgery, right?
Yeah, it's like the foil blankets. Yeah. Like they fold up into the size of your wallet, and you put them in the glove box in your car. It's got that on the inside. It's like that heat reflective foil lining. It's not really foil, but it's like this mesh foil lining.
Like scaly, almost like a snake.
It is. Oh my God, it's so warm. Now it's also like the moisture wicking, sweat repellent. So it's like, it sounds disgusting. I'm talking about like moist stuff now.
You said moist.
Moist. But it actually, yeah. So it's like sweat evaporates through it, keeps the heat in. Like, honest to God, I was warmer than heck during the game. I literally went and picked this coat up Friday night.
So
from Husker Hounds,
84th and Center, right?
Oh, I did the 84th and Center, which I'm 6'5", 260 pounds. They had a coat that fit me. They always do, though. The size selection there is mind-blowing.
Husker Hounds, three locations in the Omaha area, or you can shop online at huskerhounds.com. Make sure to follow Dr. Rob on Twitter. The dude is active, especially during the season. Follow him at Doc Talk Sports. Again, at Doc Talk Sports. And if you don't catch Doc here on the podcast, he also joins Michael Xavier every Monday right around 11:30.
Thereabouts, yeah, 11:20, 11:30.
That's on AM 590, the Husker affiliate. So, yeah, so Michael has you on every Monday, which is super cool. And you know, I get you every Monday night because, well, we're lovers.
You and Michael or you and me?
You and me. No?
Yeah,
no?
There we go. I love it.
I like it. Didn't you see me in drag on your Twitter page today?
Oh, I did. But I saw that like a couple weeks ago, too. So.
I make a fat sea witch look good.
Oh, my gosh. That's freaking killing me.
Hey, we also want to thank Husker Max. Husker Max and HuskerMax.com, the official distributor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. So nice of David Max and his team to put our content up on the website. So if you need Husker news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, HuskerMax.com. Let's dive right into the listener email. We're going to start tonight with Michael, who has a very quick and easy question. Is there cause for concern for the defense against the run?
Yes. I mean, this is a defense that, you know, I think in a best-case scenario, if Chenander has exactly the athletes he wants, it's a defense predicated on getting turnovers, tackles for loss, and sacks. And if they do that and they do it consistently, they're going to be just fine. They don't have those athletes in Lincoln quite yet. Do I think they're getting them? Yes. Do I think they're going to continue to get them? Yes. Do I think the guys they have are going to continue to develop? Yes. But with the system that Chenander wants to run, bend but not break isn't a great way to put it. He wants three things. He wants turnovers, he wants tackles for loss, he wants sacks. If they get those three things, they're going to win a lot of football games. They actually did an okay job of that against Illinois. They still gave up 500 yards. Well, so you're not going to be able to do that.
So if you want turnovers, if you want tackles for loss and sacks, that means you're going to gamble a little bit, right? So you're going to get beat a couple times.
You are. You're going to get beat, but you are going to have to gamble. Here's the thing. They don't have the quality of athletes they need to be able to gamble as much as he wants to be able to do it. And so they end up looking bad. You know, the thing that it's sort of a two-part story that I tell about how I look at Chenander and the defense and what these guys have done over the last year or so. Look at that Peach Bowl game against Auburn. That was a very good Auburn team. Auburn beat both Alabama last year, who won the national title, and they beat Georgia, who Alabama played for the national title. They beat both teams in the national title game. Auburn very narrowly ended up going to the national title game. I think they had a rematch against Georgia in the SEC title game in which they lost that bumped them out of the playoffs. But that was a game where they get Central Florida, Chenander, that defense gave up some yardage to Auburn. It gave up some points to Auburn. They also had a lot of takeaways. They also had a lot of tackles for loss. They also had, I think it was something like 7 or 8 sacks in that game. And what that did, I mean, it knocks your opponent back. It forces them to punt, and it creates it changes your starting point on offense. It flips the field, so to speak. And that's the line I was looking for there. That's what tackles for loss and sacks do. They flip the field. And I think that's Chenander's goal. Get the ball back for the offense, flip the field if you can't get the ball back. And that's what they're going to try and do. The downside is they're going to give up some yardage. They're going to give up some points. Late in that Auburn game against Central Florida in the Peach Bowl, Central Florida had a touchdown lead. Auburn was driving for a potential game tying, maybe game, if they went for two, game winning touchdown. Auburn got down to, I can't remember what it was, the 11 yard line, 12 yard line, 15 yard line. And Auburn's starting center got injured. We featured him on the show last year. He was a Remington Trophy finalist. Kid's an amazing, amazing athlete. I think he was actually a 2-time Remington Trophy finalist. He was the leader of Auburn's offensive line, suffers a pretty good ankle sprain on a play that right around, like I said, 12 to 15 yard line. So Auburn does kind of this weird shuffle up on the offensive line. They move their left tackle to center. They move the left guard out to left tackle. And they bring actually a pretty experienced, kind of their sixth man, so to speak, in from the sideline to take over the left guard spot. Now, I'm watching the game, and the thought going through my head watching this as a former player and as an offensive lineman is, okay, your best offensive lineman, team captain, leader of the line, and signal caller on the offensive line, just went to the sideline with an injury. You completely reshuffled your lineup on the offensive line to make up for his absence. If I am the opposing defensive coordinator, what do you do in that situation, Travis?
Tell me.
No, you tell me. You've got a completely shuffled O-line. Game's on the line. Best offensive lineman just went to the sideline. Signal caller, team leader just went to the sideline. It's passing down, by the way. If you're the defense, what are you doing?
I'm blitzing.
I'm bringing the freaking house. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, my God, if Chenander has a brain on him at all, he's going to throw everything but the kitchen sink at Auburn. What do you think Chenander did?
Brought everything but the kitchen.
He brought freaking everybody. I think, no joke, three separate guys hit. Is it Jake Fromm? No, I can't remember. That's Georgia. It's Auburn's quarterback. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Three different Central Florida defenders hit him at one time. Ball, as he's trying to throw, the ball launches into the air. It was the most ugly lame duck you've ever seen in your life. Easily lands in the arms of a Central Florida defender for an interception. Game's over. Central Florida wins.
That was the longest answer to a simple question I've
my
ever heard.
My point is that I think
I'm just telling you.
My point is, I think the guy actually knows what he's doing.
Okay.
I think they're going to be pretty good. I don't think he has what he needs to work with right now.
Remy and Sue have this to say. The first half of the season was painful. However, the last three games have been inspiring. We've seen growth in the team this season. What's Doc's assessment of the amount of pain they'll have to endure the rest of the season as it plays out? There's only two games left.
I think you don't make a bowl game. That's going to be 90% of it, is that right there. I really do think they beat Michigan State. I've been talking a little bit of smack here on the air about Iowa. I've been tweeting a lot about Iowa.
Because you like giving me a hard time. Even my boss comes into the office and he goes, boy, Rob's just all over you on Twitter. I'm like, well, we like to have a lot of fun.
It's a Nebraska-Iowa thing, and part of it's the reason that, like I said, half my family is all from Iowa. So I think Nebraska's going to beat Iowa. I really do. I think Iowa's got a very good defense, but very good defenses this year have failed to slow down Nebraska at this point.
I would give you that, and that leads into Morgan's question. He says, as I write this, Northwestern just took the lead on Iowa. If Kirk Ferentz loses the next two games, Northwestern, which they did, a trap game at Illinois, no, they're not going to lose to Illinois. Could the Huskers skull crush Iowa and Iowa City and cause a coaching vacancy there? First of all, there's not going to be a coaching vacancy.
That's not going to happen.
Now, don't get me wrong.
But you do have a lot. There's a lot of Iowa fans who are not happy with Ferentz.
Here's the problem,
right,
Rob,
now.
And I had this on Sound Off the other night, and I can speak to at great length with this. You have a fan base divided. You have a fan base that wants some – they're not really calling for a coaching change. They want you to think differently outside the box. Look innovative, right? Because there's nothing innovative.
Like, I don't know, maybe throw the ball to Noah Fant?
Well, that's part of it. But you also have a fan – part
of
the fan
base.
Who's
the other tight end?
T.J. Hawkinson, who's really good.
How about Hawkinson?
Yeah, he
maybe they should throw the ball to T.J. Hawkinson,
they do
too.
A lot. They go to Hawkinson a lot more than they go to Fant, and that's a problem. He says the looks like the Black Friday games is Nebraska's bowl game. Yes,
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, but you know, let's talk about Noah Fant. Because you was it your tweet who said, what would Noah Fant do when Scott Frost's off?
And I made it very clear, because I had a few fans who were like, dude, shut up, get over. And I'm like, hey, I was very clear about the fact this is pure, hey, sometimes it's kind of fun to play the what if game. It is. Hey,
yeah.
Imagine if such and such happened in the world of sports. I'm just saying, hey, imagine if Noah Fant had gone to Nebraska and was playing for Frost right now.
I find it interesting that when Noah Fant's brother sent out some tweets criticizing the amount of playing time and him being on the field, it's like the Ferentzes have retaliated against Noah Fant. It's really bizarre. And I find it interesting that Kirk Ferentz would do that, considering, and you can't deny this, he's recruited Omaha and the state of Nebraska quite well.
Oh, very well. And he has for, geez, probably going back 15 years.
Yes. That's why I find it bizarre.
Almost 20. You go back to about 2000, which was only a couple years after he took over in Iowa City. He really made an effort to recruit Omaha.
That's why I can't believe that he would pull this with maybe, you know, I had Scott Docterman on my radio show this morning.
You say that. Do you think he's...
Yes.
That he's actually...
Yes.
Pulling a...
Yes.
I'll show you.
Yes. I do. I think he did it with DJK. I think he's done it with other players. It's a team first, right? And he doesn't
get that. But
he doesn't like it, superstars. He doesn't like it.
I know, but if you've got one, you got to ride that.
Stubbornness.
You got to ride
stubbornness.
That.
Stubbornness. It's frustrating. I really do believe it's retaliation.
But you think he's doing that at the cost of winning a game?
Rob, I had Scott Docterman on my show this
what
morning.
What did Docterman? Because I read a little bit of the transcript. I did not read or listen to the full interview.
So if you want to listen to the whole thing about Noah Fant, go to KXNO.com, go to podcasts, click on the 7 a.m. hour on Monday the 12th of the KXNO Morning Rush. Do you realize Noah Fant, I think Docterman said this, his 40 time last year is like faster than any tight end in NFL Combine history?
Yeah. I did know that.
Yes.
The guy's a freak.
The guy is a freak. And here's the deal. So
he's going to go to the NFL.
Docterman put out a good thing.
And everybody's going to be like, oh, my God, it's another great Iowa tight end. It's the next Dwight Clark. See, he's going to be next level. He's going to make Kellen Winslow
this look is what pedestrian. Docterman brought up. You know, this is where Kirk Ferentz and even Brian Ferentz can't get out of their mind, where in some sense when it's a three wide receiver set, you got to have Fant in there because he can play wide out because of his size and his speed. The only touchdown pass that Iowa had the other day, because they were throwing horizontally and not vertical, which was driving a lot of people nuts. But the touchdown pass to Amir Smith-Marset happened when Noah Fant was in the game. You know why? He was triple teamed. I'm not kidding. That's why you put him in the game. You don't have to go to him every time, but he creates offensive mismatches to where it opens up other parts of the game for you.
Here's the thing, and this is why I like what you just said right there, is why I sit around and I play the whole what-if game in my head, and why it is so incredibly interesting to consider Fant and Frost's offense. Because if there's anything Frost does, he innovates, he's creative, and my God, Frost will do anything to generate a mismatch on the field. And I look at Fant, and all I think is, one, he's an absolute mismatch machine, whether it's individually against either a linebacker. Linebackers aren't fast enough to cover him. Defensive backs aren't big enough. Some of them aren't fast. Some defensive backs aren't fast enough to cover him. Size-wise, he's a freak of nature. So individual mismatches are one thing. The other mismatch he creates is just for defenses on the whole, and you just set it right there. You got a guy who's going to pull double teams and triple teams, is going to open up other guys. Could you imagine what a Noah Fant could do with J.D. Spielman and Stanley Morgan? Do you know? Can you imagine? I mean, I watching the game
because Iowa doesn't have wide receivers like that.
Dude, Stanley Morgan and J.D. Spielman are getting double teamed. Imagine what that could do for Noah Fant.
I mean, for the
Noah Fant could be a 1,500-yard receiver out of Frost's offense.
Well, that's what was driving people nuts is that T.J. Hockenson was in for 61 snaps the other day, and Noah Fant was only in for 34. It doesn't make any sense that your best player, Akram Wadley, remember Akram Wadley? Pretty decent running back.
He freaking gashed the hell out of us the last 2 years.
He sends out a tweet saying, why isn't the best player on the field?
Wadley did
that?
Yes. Oh, that's funny.
And that's rare that former players will do that. I mean, it's just very frustrating if you're an Iowa fan, which nobody listening to this podcast is.
If you're a Nebraska fan, you find this stuff
hilarious. You take great pleasure in my misery. Mark says, hey, guys, I have a dumb question for the doc. No dumb questions, Mark. Don't worry about it. When the offense is lined up, I see the tackle look back at the quarterback and tap the side of his butt. What's he trying to convey to the quarterback? Thanks, guys. Love the podcast. It's from Mark.
That he's got a sexy butt. Actually, I'm not entirely sure. No, oftentimes they're doing silent counts, things like that. It might be nothing other than, hey, I'm ready for the snap count. And these guys also, if you watch them, watch Nebraska's offense lineup. They do a lot of reading, referring back to the sideline, rereading, and then back again. And so if you watch them, you'll see the offensive line, you'll see the centers, you'll see the guards pointing at individual linebackers. Most offenses usually will key off of the middle linebacker. Now, sometimes the defense lines up with one linebacker in a dime package. Well, a couple of the defensive backs then are de facto linebackers, and so you still have to identify who the middle linebacker is because the offense will always move their run block, their run blocking, the pass block coverage. All of that will key off who the de facto middle linebacker is. Sometimes the middle linebacker is actually a safety. In rare instances, the middle linebacker might actually be an extra cornerback. And so these guys are signaling those defensive alignments. Who's the middle linebacker? Who are we keying off of? And that's usually what they're That's usually what they're doing when you see
that's Rob drinking too much beer.
It is delicious. But that's usually what you're seeing when you see a tackle do that. It's either a, I got to be honest, I'm not 100% familiar. It's either, hey, I'm ready to go, or B, he's given a signal in terms of here's how I'm reading the defensive alignment.
Michael out in Colorado says, hey, guy, I've been listening to the podcast for 3 years now. Thanks, Michael. Appreciate it. And I actually like it when you talk about Iowa, Travis, because it brings a different perspective to the conversation. You and Dr. Rob have good chemistry on the podcast. Don't let the haters get you down. Oh, haters don't get me down. I just like to give them a little shit if I can.
Is there no question there?
No.
I wanted a question from a Colorado guy.
Well, here comes a question from Brian. Brian says, let's say the program gets strong and consistent again and Scott Frost is still our head coach 10 years from now. Looking to the crystal ball to 2028, what level has taken the program to? Consistent 9-win seasons with no huge embarrassments, the most consistent division champion like Wisconsin has been, the most consistent conference champion like Ohio State in the Big Ten and Oklahoma in the Big 12, a guaranteed playoff contender every year with only one or two losses on par with the likes of Clemson. That's a tough question to ask.
That's a real tough one. I trying to temper my excitement. I think it's the kind of the second from last there, where you're like the Oklahoma, the Ohio State, the consistent conference title contender, and you're at least in contention for making the playoffs.
Isn't it weird now because in the state of college football, the benchmark for Nebraska used to be 9 wins. Really, that was for a lot of. Now, if you're a 9-win season, you're a good team, but great.
It is, but that was kind of a percentage thing.
When
you only played 10, I shouldn't say 10. When you only played 11 games a year, sometimes 10, sometimes 12, but usually 11. 9 wins was pretty damn good. I mean, that's a slightly better than 90% winning percentage. I mean, if you got a football coach who's averaging 9+ wins a year, that's a coach with, what is that, like a 910 yeah. winning percentage. I mean, that's instant Hall of Fame. When you're playing 12 regular season games, oftentimes you get 13 games in a season. Nine just isn't that good anymore. Now, the other thing is that there's been kind of an odd application of parity within college football. And when I say that is, I refer back to when they started restricting scholarship, when they started, well, I shouldn't say restricting, but instituting scholarship limits. And Division 1A football is what? They're at 85 scholarships yep. now. I got to be honest, I didn't think it'd make that big a difference, but it did. It made a huge difference. Now, I think the difference is that most people thought when parity hit, you would have a whole bunch of 6, 7, and 8 win teams. That would become the norm within college football. It did not quite play out that way. What ended up happening was you had a massive number of 9, 10, and 11 win teams is what ended up happening.
And really only a few elite teams. You have elite, yeah. you have great, and you have good.
Yeah, and there's a lot of great teams.
Yes.
Not elite, but there's a lot of great teams. When I played in the early to mid-1990s, if you had 7 or 8 wins, that was a top 25 team. I remember we beat Oklahoma in 1994, and it dropped them to 6-5. And it took them being 6-5 to actually drop out of the top 25. They were actually in the polls until that loss. That fifth loss is actually what knocked Oklahoma out of the top 25 and cost Gary Gibbs his job. So you could have 6 wins, 7 wins, and you were still a top 25 team. It is hard to be a top 25 team unless you have at least 8, more likely 9 wins now.
Ryan says, who's the worst team this year, Nebraska or Iowa? Same question for 2019. Well, you'll know next week. I mean, that's...
Well, and Iowa's going to finish the season with 6 wins no matter what. They've got Nebraska beat in the win column no matter what. We'll find out in terms of head-to-head matchups here in a little over a week and a half.
Dale from Portland, Oregon says, next year, I mean, I'm sorry you live in Portland, man. That is the liberal capital of the world. You got Antifa out there. You got homeless people. I'm sorry, Dale. I don't mean to rip on where you live.
I'll give you that, although it's like...
It is beautiful, though.
Like a month from now, month and a half from now, late December... It's going to be 55 degrees and everything will be green, and they got a lot of craft beer out there.
Next year,
need all that craft beer to put up with all the freaking liberals.
So Dale from Portland says, next year, who makes the biggest jump on defense? Oh, and Brooke Behringer belongs in the Mount Rushmore of Nebraska football.
God damn right. I like Dale a lot.
Who makes the biggest jump on defense? Next year.
Whew. Boy, that's a good question, actually. Mo Berry's a junior this year. It's going to be somebody almost overly obvious, like Mo Berry or one of the Davis twins, Ben Stilley. One of those guys, because you're going to take guys who I think have some natural talent. You're going to give them another year of understanding. And you're going to give them another year of really, really good physical development that they wouldn't have gotten under one of the prior coaches. So those are the guys that I think you're going to see take that big jump. I don't think you're going to see the, crap, where did this kid come from? You're just not. It's going to be one of those guys, one of those key contributors this year. I think it's going to make a massive jump going into next year.
Jeff says, hey, fellas, first of all, thanks, Trav, for saying the F-bomb last week. No problem. I'm here to help.
God, I get so many people asking him and saying we need to say it.
With that in mind, it's time for the heated debate. Is Brooke Behringer truly a top 4 quarterback of all time?
Well, I mean, are we talking college football or are we talking
Nebraska? He's talking
Nebraska. Nebraska, yeah.
Okay, now who's your top four again?
I do Frazier, Taggy, Behringer, and Frost.
So who gets dethroned from that when Adrian Martinez goes 4 years and wins a national title? You should see his face. I just totally fucked him up. I've made you mad with a question. First of all, I just said
I didn't say I didn't. No, you didn't make me mad.
You had those eyes that could.
It's
kill.
Not well. It's. I'll say this. It's not Behringer.
It's Frost.
Hey, it wasn't at QB, but Frost went to the NFL. Behringer definitely was going to go to the NFL.
You're going to knock Tommy off of there? You would have a revolt in the streets, my friend.
You know, I'm not saying that, but
it's one to think about. Adrian Martinez might end up being on that list.
Here, they got to win a national title.
Okay, that's fair.
There's something fair. About a guy because in 97... Frost was such a massive part of the reason that Nebraska won that national title. There's a degree of him taking that team and willing them to win. Or to win games is in the fashion in which they won it. Keep it. Frost was the first Nebraska quarterback to run and
pass for 1,000.
For 1,000 yards in a season. Nobody did that before Frost. Turner Gill never did that. Tommy Frazier never did that. Steve Taylor never did that.
Wow. You're going to take Tommy off the list.
I'm not taking him off the list. If Martinez...
Did you hear that? He's taking Tommy off the list.
If Martinez wins a national title... I'm saying you either move one direction or the other and you carve out a fifth spot.
Well, it's only top four. Neil Holstein. Hey, are we related, Neil? Because my wife's maiden name is Holstein. He said a few weeks back, Doc mentioned that he wasn't sold on Shenander's defense, but said he needed more time to recruit and develop his own players. What specifically do you see in Shenander's defense that you find most troubling, and why is this particular defense vulnerable to those problems? That's from Neil.
Yeah, you know, we kind of already covered that. And I think a lot of it's just due to the fact that it's predicated on turnovers, big plays, tackles for loss, and sacks. And if you're going to gamble like that, you're going to give up some big plays. And if you don't have the horses 11 across the board, that's going to hurt you. And they don't have 11 horses across the board on that defense right now.
And Jason's looking ahead to 2019. Wants to know if Nebraska will be the favorite to win the Big Ten West in 2019. That's a tough question to ask.
That's actually a great question.
It is, but it's a tough one. It depends on, well, first of all, we won't know because the Big Ten doesn't do a preseason poll. And I'm sure it depends on, there will be some magazines that go out there on a limb.
Screw the other polls or realistically who will be the favorite. If Nebraska beats Michigan State... and they beat Iowa. I think all of a sudden you can't discount them from the conversation for the Big Ten West next year because they've got a lot of key guys coming back on the defense. So the defense is going to continue to progress. It's going to continue to develop and hopefully continue to improve. You know the offense is only going to get better.
Rob, this is from Michael. Rob has said several times that Bill Callahan was a horrible, horrible coach. I agree, but I can't figure out why he's had such a long career in coaching in the college and the pros, including a Super Bowl, if he's such an awful coach. The guy has been a coach in college and the pros for 38 years and counting.
Well, let me clarify a few
things.
He's
not a horrible, horrible coach.
He's a horrible offensive coordinator.
Yes.
Hold on. He's a highly questionable offensive coordinator.
Great offensive line coach, man.
He is a horrible head coach at the NFL or college level. He is hands down one of the best offensive line coaches to ever coach. That's why he's lasted as long as he does. He has an amazing understanding of offensive football and even better understanding of how to coach offensive
linemen. He was almost too smart for his britches when it came to offensive play. I mean, I think he...
I'll give you that. I think he outthinks himself, but he has a poor ability in terms of applying that knowledge to game-specific situations. You put him in a game, it's third quarter, your defense is tired, the running game has been working awesome, the opponent's strength is shutting down the pass, but Callahan's the guy who's going to come out there and decide he's going to wow everybody with his knowledge of the passing game. And it's not going to work, and Nebraska's going to get beat in the Cotton Bowl by Auburn all over again.
Oh, I was there. You know, I remember that because I was heading to the Cotton Bowl, and it's 5:30 in the morning, and my wife's water broke, and I was supposed to be on the plane in 2 hours. That was a fun phone call to make. Hey, I'm not going to the Cotton Bowl today. I'm going to go have my wife's going to have a baby. So Greta turns 12 this year, so it's 12 years ago.
Oh, my God.
So we had the baby, and I flew down the next day. I said, you got this? You got three already. You don't need me around here.
I remember leaving the house, grabbing my kids, going sledding, and taking the dogs down to the park to literally chase tennis balls in the snow that day because I was so fed up watching the second half of that game. It was horrendous. I'm blanking. Who is Nebraska's offensive coordinator under Callahan?
Well, it was Bill Callahan, but then he brought in Watson.
Now, this was before Watson.
Then it was Callahan calling the play.
Yeah, they had another offensive coordinator. Ended up going to Oklahoma.
Oh, Jay Norvell?
Thank you, Jay Norvell.
I don't know. He never let Jay Norvell call the play.
No, he didn't. Well, he did until there was success, and then Callahan would take over. And in the second half of that Auburn game, against that Auburn game in the Cotton Bowl, Jay Norvell was screaming into the headset, run the ball, because Nebraska was gashing Auburn with the run game, and Callahan turned off his headset.
Jay Norvell's the head coach at Nevada Reno now.
Is he really?
Yeah.
I actually always thought he was a pretty darn good coach. At least offensively, I thought he was pretty solid. Callahan completely botched that team's.
You know where he played football?
Where?
University of Iowa.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yep, Iowa guy.
Iowa, great coaches. They take what they learn from there and do the exact opposite elsewhere. Callahan. Incredible, incredible, incredible offensive line coach. So coordinator, horrible head coach.
And that, my friends, is the parting shot from Dr. Rob Zadiska. Don't forget, next Monday. What day is that? What day is next Monday? Is that the 19th? We're going to be recording live at Infusion Brewing Company in Benson.
I'm going to be drinking moist hops.
There you go. Dr. Rob's going to be drinking. I'm going to be drinking. We'll start recording around 8 o'clock, but we'll stay until people are done asking questions and having fun. Thanks to the Remington Trophy for being the presenting sponsor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. January 12th, 2019 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. That is the Remington Trophy presentation. For ticket and table information, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. Get your tickets at Ticket Express, and of course, like Dr. Rob, buy your Husker gear at Husker Hounds. For Dr. Rob Zadiska, I'm Travis Justice. We'll talk to you next week. It's Black Friday week. It's Hawkeyes, Huskers.
Well, that's next week.
Yeah, I know. We'll be throwing
this
some smack.
This is Michigan State week.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to next week.
Oh, so am I. It's going to be so much fun to watch Iowa lose.
It's the Husker Doc Talk podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy.